Meeting is now being recorded.
Hello, everybody. This is Larissa Gurnick from MSSI team here to present some information to you and have a discussion on a proposed update to operating standards for specific review, a topic of interest to many people, and some of the most dedicated ones are here with us today. So thank you very much for joining. This is the second webinar that we are holding on the topic, same exact content. We had one earlier today in the Pacific time zone, yesterday for some of you. And as you may have seen in the chat, it was pretty well attended, and more importantly, the discussion was very productive. We received good input from the participants, and to the extent possible, we'll weave this information into the presentation that we're about to go into here. So with that, so the agenda. We're going to go through a brief introduction, just a quick reminder for those of you that may not be thinking operating standards and specific reviews day in and day out, the way some of us do. And then we will cover seven areas, topics of particular interest, where the discussion has been the most robust and areas of consideration most interesting. And you see them all listed here. So we're going to dig in. I just wanted to please invite you to ask questions after each topic. That makes it much more engaging and timely. So we'll do it that way. All right. So operating standards is something that the bylaws call for, first of all, and they've been in development for quite a bit now, with the first draft operating standards having been posted for public comment in October last year, so a year ago. The public comment closed in early part of this calendar year. There, too, there was good feedback that we've taken into consideration. And the purpose of this presentation is to provide highlights and go over the highlights of the updates that we're proposing to do to the draft operating standards in several key areas of significance and interest. So what you're seeing here today is not the entirety of the draft operating standards, but it's the topics of particular interest. The plan will be to post for public comment at some point after ICANN 63 the entire document, the entirety of the draft operating standards. And, of course, we'll talk about that a bit later, about next steps. But there will be a version that makes it very clear in red line what's changed and what's new and so on. And now we'll get into the first topic. And the first topic is nomination of review team candidates. And the format of how we want to present this information is pretty consistent throughout. So we'll I'll highlight for you community feedback that we've received from the first public comment period and other input. And then I will touch on what is being proposed in the current cycle, if you will. So on the nomination of review team candidates, what we heard is that the existing non-binding ICANN org analysis of skills and diversity of candidates is welcome and is useful. We also heard that SOs and ACs should be allowed to nominate any candidate who applied, regardless of whether they sought nomination from a particular group. So what's how that's been turned around in the current proposal is that the non-binding analysis of skills and diversity of applicants that is already being prepared by ICANN.org will continue and will continue to be shared with the nominating SOs and ACs. Then each SO and AC, following its own internal processes, will nominate up to 7 candidates for a given review. Each SO and AC is also encouraged to document its internal processes and exercise suitable transparency in line with various individual procedures and guidelines for each group. SOs and ACs shall take into consideration candidates' skill sets, diversity, and any potential conflicts of interest. We're also adding an encouragement to seek input on skills and possible conflicts of interest from community peers, broader community, and ICANN.org. SOs and ACs are not limited in selecting candidates that request their nomination, meaning they may nominate any of the candidates, and that's directly in response to community feedback. And SOs and ACs are encouraged to complete the selection within 10 weeks of closing of the call for volunteers. And if more time is necessary, that this be communicated to various other SOs and ACs to keep the selection process moving timely. You'll see references to suggested timeframes throughout this presentation and throughout the document. They are suggested timelines, never mandates, just indications of what seems to be a reasonable time frame based on past experience and also in an attempt to move the process and keep people engaged. Are there any questions or comments on the nomination of review team candidates? Okay. Moving right along then. And feel free to come back if you think of another of a question or something you'd like to go back to at any time. The next is the actual selection of review team members, so it's part two of the selection process, if you will. So the community feedback was that the SOs and ACs have a preference that whatever their preference is of the nominated candidates, that should be binding on the chairs. So in other words, when each group submits a list of candidates, that the chairs go with those recommendations. Support for ICANN organization to provide to the SOAC chairs with a non-binding analysis similar to the one that we do during the nomination process, looking at skills and diversity. At this time, it would be applied to a smaller pool of people. So these are people that are about to or potentially will be selected to be seated on the review team. And finally, we heard feedback that a given SO or AC should not reserve seats on the review team for later selection to avoid disruption of review team's work. So what is being proposed is that non-binding analysis of skills and diversity of the set of nominees will be shared with the chairs for their information and will also be communicated with the board via the Organizational Effectiveness Committee of the board, the group that oversees the review process. As part of its oversight function, the board, through the OEC, will inform the SOAC chairs of any concerns that committee may have in regards to diversity or skill set of nominees. If they have some questions or concerns about meeting their requirements that are detailed in the bylaws. SO and AC chairs are encouraged, but not required, to select the review team within a three-week period after receiving the nominee list. And ICANN.org's non-binding skill and diversity analysis, again, they're suggesting a timeline, but not mandating it. the authority chairs may confer with their respective groups to nominate different candidates if there is some concern about the pool being insufficiently diverse or skilled. And the chairs, if the chairs find that the pool of candidates does not reflect sufficiently diverse and skilled review team, they could agree to reopen the call for volunteers as requested through the public comment. SOAC chairs cannot reserve seats for selection later. And if the review team determines that it doesn't have, if it determines that it doesn't have sufficient skills or diversity, they can also address this with the SO and SOs and ACs in whatever form they find that would be appropriate. Any questions on the selection?
Cheryl. One from me. Thanks, Marissa. Cheryl. Thanks. If you can just scroll back to the one of one on this two-slide deck. You mentioned on the last bullet point here is the proposal, and there wasn't much that took me out of my comfort zone, I might add, but a few little bits sort of edged there. This is one of them. Let's assume, hypothetically, in some distant time, with a different board and different ACSO chairs, that there is a disagreement on this point. In other words, based on the bylaws, the board maintain that the proposed pool is insufficiently skilled or diverse, but the ACSO chairs disagree with that. Now, on the following page, it says, you know, it's all up to the SOAC chairs. But how do we stop the, without triggering full empowered community awful bits, how do we stop a lack of resourcing being held as a sort of Damocles over a particular review team at some future point in time? You see what I mean? I'm just a little uncomfortable with this needing maybe a little bit more detail or something. Anyway, just wanted to put it out there. Thanks.
Thanks for the observation and the comments, Cheryl. Certainly will be noted, and I will also flag that later in this presentation we'll have a whole section on dispute resolution and, you know, how to handle circumstances where there's differences of opinion between a variety of, you know, different sources. As we learned from the earlier webinar, these are difficult topics to resolve and address. There's many different views, and it's possible that some additional thought and consideration needs to go into this to make it practical and useful. But at this point, what we've incorporated is just some ideas for how to at least have the opportunity to flag areas of concern so that they can be addressed if people agree to them at the right time in order to make sure that the review teams are properly resourced. Thank you for the question. I see that Avery added a comment. Avery, do you want to comment any further, or shall we continue?
No, this is Avery. I was just sort of responding to Cheryl's and basically trying to say that concerns are not the same as the OEC and the board vetoing. It's just expressing concerns. So those two are different, to which Cheryl quite rightly answered, well, then, you know, you control the purse strings, and that can be mighty influential. And at which point I responded, well, then the awful bits that she referred to might be warranted. So it was just that sort of conversation that, you know, one of the requests you got at the last one, and yes, I'm insane enough to have sat through both of these, was that we not turn this into a set of law books. I think they use different language. where we go very deeply and have to assume that there's enough correction mechanisms that will, you know, take care of it. So I'm not arguing that we shouldn't be careful here, but I do want to differentiate between concerns and a decision that says, no, you can't have those people. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Very good point. Any other comments on the selection of review team members? Okay. Moving right along, scope setting. And scope setting is an area that it's a good example of why it's important to keep in mind that these operating standards should be useful and practical. In the first draft of operating standards, the proposal was somewhat cumbersome and complex, and boy, we heard quite a lot about that through the public comment about the fact that having scope setting groups start a year before the review team and all, you know, the various other mechanisms that we proposed, you know, based on some reasonable, you know, baselines, was just not a feasible, workable way to do it. So the scope setting updated proposal is what I'm going to walk you through here pretty quickly, but also what became apparent is that some definitions might be helpful. So what you see on the screen, and I'm not going to go through them in detail, is the plan to incorporate some basic definitions into the operating standards that all deal with scope of work and areas, topics that the review team looks at. So as I already mentioned, there was very strong support for the putting it in a positive. Actually, it was very strong negative feedback on the proposal to set scope for the review team ahead of time, or a more positive spin that you see here. That was very direct feedback, and we took that to heart, obviously. So what's being proposed is that the review team should set its own scope within a suggested 8-week time frame. Again, not mandated, but there was a robust discussion about the feasibility of the 8 weeks in the first webinar, and I'll talk about that in a second. Scope of work is included in a dedicated section of the terms of reference and further elaborated in more detail in the work plan. So in the terms of reference, the review team can mention at a high level what areas will be worked on, while the work plan itself gets into more details as to how the work will be organized, what specific topics and areas will be addressed, what kind of timeline and milestones are expected, and assignment of responsibilities to different resources that are available. Once the review team adopts its scope of work and work plan, it will seek input from the SOAC leadership and the ICANN board. Review team is encouraged, but not required, to take input from the community and the board into account as it updates its scope, unless the board finds that the scope that has been adopted by the review team somehow is in violation of the bylaws. The board has the responsibility to assure that scope does not violate the bylaws. So if the board finds a potential violation, the review team would in that case be required to address that and adapt the scope accordingly. Any questions on setting the scope? I see a question from Cheryl. What triggers the start of the time frames here? Very good question. Please do keep in mind that what you're looking at here is not the actual language that will be in the operating standard. That will be much more detailed. But what we're suggesting here is 8 weeks from the time that the review team is convened from its first substantive meeting. Next topic is review teams reporting requirements. So this is the first of several sections that was not part of the previous iteration of the draft operating standards, but we're proposing to add it because it contributes to a process of helping the review teams do their work and the timely conclusion of reviews. So on the topic of review teams reporting requirements, what's being proposed is that the review team is encouraged to update the community on a consistent and transparent basis using all the typical available mechanisms. The review team is encouraged to define in its terms of reference a procedure by which they will keep the community and the board informed on a timely basis. Also encouraged to develop outreach plans based on whatever commitments they make in the terms of reference for engagement. And, of course, iGenOrg, my team, is available to support those efforts. Review team leadership should provide these updates throughout the review. And as is already the practice, we, iGenOrg, will continue to develop fact sheets to support the reporting requirements, and we do that currently on a quarterly basis. Fact sheets will detail, at a minimum, relevant metrics on the review, which includes attendance records of review team members, progression of work, and budget updates. Any questions on reporting? Okay, next topic is monitoring review progress. Again, this section, there was nothing on this topic included in the first iteration of operating standards, but with community feedback on those reviews that have been going on since the new bylaws, there were inputs and discussions that led us to believe that this area would be useful. So what's being proposed is the following. Review team conducts its work autonomously within its mission, defined scope, budget, and in accordance with provisions of the bylaws and these operating standards. And, of course, review teams are empowered to formulate recommendations based on their own opinions and evaluation of facts. Also, the review team is accountable to the global community in performing its duties and making sure that that happens effectively by adhering to the terms of reference and operating standards to make sure that volunteer time and resources are deployed appropriately. So as a means of monitoring review team progress, the SOs and ACs and the board via the OEC will monitor the various elements that are listed here, completion of milestones, effective use of volunteer time, participation and contribution levels, and scope of the review to avoid duplication with other community initiatives to help ensure that at the end of the day, the review ends up with useful recommendations. Questions? Okay. Well, we're zipping right along here, so probably the most interesting section is the one that's here, dispute resolution. Again, there was nothing like this included in the first draft, but it seemed appropriate that there is a need to find consensus-based solutions to various concerns that might emerge during the conduct of reviews. So we developed these ideas and these proposals, which are really intended to do two things. first of all, tap into the already existing processes that are available within the ICANN community for dealing with situations of disputes or conflict. But also, secondly, create a escalation path for dealing with topics that are unique and specific to these specific reviews. So both of those ideas are reflected in the proposal. Conflicts or disputes between review team members, such as interpersonal disputes, will be addressed in line with conflict resolution and escalation paths that already exist in various community working groups, such as what detailed in the JNSO for operating procedures. And the review team may decide to use other guidelines or procedures that have precedence within the ICANN community. During the first webinar, it was pointed out, and we will definitely take this on board to make sure that things are spelled out more clearly in the draft operating standards, that part of the GNSO operating procedures, there's various steps that are associated with them. And one is the use of the Ombuds office and the Ombudsman to resolve conflicts. So we will definitely elaborate on that and incorporate that to make sure that it's clear that along with all the other mechanisms that are available already would be used here. Concerns about scope of work, methodology, community outreach, or other similar elements that are more unique to specific reviews should be communicated directly to the review team through the review team leadership. The review team and the party that raised concerns should attempt to resolve these concerns directly through discussion. Every effort should be made to do this quickly and productively, without undue disruptions to the work of the review. Subject to privacy concerns, all conflict-related conversations should be in conformity with ICANN's transparency and accountability requirements. So then, the approach to resolving conflicts or issues, if everything that we've talked about so far does not seem to yield a productive result, then the parties that have the concerns would raise these concerns or issues to the SOAC chairs. The SOAC chairs or another forum of their choice will then discuss the issue and provide appropriate a resolution. If the chairs cannot agree on a solution, they would suggest an alternative means to help resolve the problem in a timely basis. And it could be things like facilitation, public consultation, or some other means that they determine to be useful in order to overcome whatever the impasse circumstance. It's important to note that such alternative means may require the review team to pause its work, but such disruptions should be used only as a means of last resort, because it's of paramount importance that the work continues on a timely basis. If the board identifies an issue with a review that they feel poses a significant risk to meeting bylaw obligations or might result in a significant misuse of financial resources, the board will initiate consultation with the SOACs include potentially issuing a pause on review activities in order for those matters to be resolved. It was also pointed out too at the earlier webinar that we're mixing SOAC chairs and then in item number 4, reflecting SOs and ACs, so that's something that we will take on board and clean up. I see, Rafiq, you have a question pausing again. only, the idea here is that that would happen only if nothing else, no other means of resolving the conflict or the concern were successful, but it would only be as a matter of absolute last resort, and it would be initiated with involvement of the SOAC chairs. So the lessons learned, thank you for bringing that up. The lessons learned from SSR2 is the reason for why the section was added. So the recommendation, the suggestion is that the concerns are brought to the SOAC chairs early on in the process, and the dialogue is used to address those concerns so that pausing of the review would not need to happen. I see that Lily's typing. Are there comments or questions on this? I see Lily. What's the role of the review team leadership to play in resolving disputes? Thank you, Lily. That's a really good question. As I mentioned on the prior page, anytime there is a concern, whether it's within the review team or from the outside about something that the review team is doing, those concerns should be brought to the attention of the review team leadership. That's the second bullet point under what's being proposed. Does that answer your question?
Larissa,
Cheryl, please go ahead. I'll respond to Lily after she's unpacking. Please go ahead.
While she's typing. Switch to the next slide, if you don't mind, slide 19. Just a slight concern, and it is, again, my futuring hypotheticals of, you know, disaster scenarios here. I feel like I'm a devil's advocate. Where is the nexus, where is the surety that the board won't be fully informed by the SOAC chairs on how such resolving of conflicts and issues is being carried out? I'm not seeing a liaison, a linkage, a requirement of the Organisational Effectiveness Committee or the board to keep their finger on the pulse of this type of activity. I doubt that it won't happen. There would certainly be some information and knowledge, but if there's misinformation and lack of knowledge, we may find the board perhaps pausing, doing something, but the SOAC chairs are actually very close to resolving. You see what I mean? I'm concerned there may be a little step missing somewhere. Thanks.
Sure. Thank you for that question, Cheryl. So I think the idea is that by putting the SOAC chairs sort of in the role of resolving the more complicated disputes that couldn't, you know, be addressed up until that point, presumably, by the way this is proposing the escalation, that, first of all, the board would not be doing any pausing. The board would be, as well as any community group or anybody that has a concern, a significant concern that they feel is not being addressed by their discussions with the review team leadership and the review team. Those steps would, you know, we would encourage that those steps take place first. But if there is still a sense that the issue is not being addressed, then it would be brought to the SOAC chairs. And then it would be really up to them to decide how to resolve the issue. So the board would not be doing anything on its own, because it would be, if the board is the one that has the concerns, it would be coming to the SOAC chairs. And ideally with the productive engagements and discussions. And with the prior topic of monitoring progress, I think that the two kind of go hand in hand, because if there is regular reporting to the board and to the SOAC and broader community, if there's regular reporting by the review team and the leadership, and there is engagement, and there is measures, reports, fact sheets, and various other things that happen on a regular basis to help track progress, then there should be pretty much transparency about where things are, so that that should hopefully make it easier to deal with the misinformation or to address misunderstanding. Did that get at the issue that you were flagging?
Yeah, look, thanks, Larissa, for that. I think perhaps in the expanded text, you know, I'm assuming what you just said is reflective of that, that'll all be much clearer, and I would have been less concerned. While I've got the microphone, though, I'm also assuming, but one should never assume, you know why, that whenever a pause, regardless of who instigates it, occurs, the clock also stops on the 12-month limitations of a review team's activities. I mean, I would think that was obvious, but perhaps it isn't. Thanks.
Thank you for that question. Good question, actually. Of course, it has to be within reason. And by the way, just since you brought up the pause again, this is really what's meant to be described here is the practicality that when there's questions about certain things and remedies are being considered, that it may not be the most useful activity for the review team to continue its work if there is some degree of uncertainty or unclarity or concern. So the pause is simply meant to address the fact that it doesn't make sense to consume resources and continue to use people's time and energy if there is a significant enough concern that's in the process of being resolved or facilitated or something like that. But to your point, sure, when there is a pause, that's obvious that the clock has to stop kicking. And just as a clarifying point, in the bylaws, the only specific review that has a mandated deadline for completion is the accountability and transparency review. The bylaws state there that that one has to be completed within 12 months of being convened. But there is not a similar specification on the timeline, although, of course, good practices and experiences suggest that it would be useful to target some reasonable time frame, such as a year or so, as a reasonable horizon to complete the work of any review team, realizing that topics are different and scope of work is different. And just for full disclosure, in the earlier session, there was quite an interesting and robust discussion about the role of the SOAC chairs. We actually had one in a group, and there was some concern expressed about whether the chairs have the methods or the resources to be put in this position to have to do that, and then. At the same time, there was some discussion about this being a new environment with the SOAC leaders having more responsibilities, but also recognizing that while those responsibilities are a reality, there may not be a process. So the reason this is difficult in some cases is that we're having to figure it out as we go, which is, you know, highlights why these discussions and going through these hypothetical scenarios that are rooted in some experience are so useful and so helpful, so that something rational and reasonable may be incorporated into the operating standards to inform the work of the upcoming review teams and perhaps even the ones that are already going on. Well, seeing no other comments on this area, I will move into the final topic before we talk about next steps. Roles and responsibilities have not been included before, but it seems appropriate to include this level of information just to bring clarity. And, of course, the various roles and responsibilities that are reflected here are in line with the proposals that you've seen on prior pages. So for the review team, it's to participate in meetings and engage on email lists, actively participate with relevant stakeholder groups within the ICANN and with the ICANN community, conduct research analysis as required based on the scope of work, and participate in the drafting as needed. For review team leadership, it's to drive toward delivery of key milestones, maintaining standards, and also focusing on the aim of the review team as established in its terms of reference, making sure that a level of consensus can be reached through the discussion, and managing the review team budget and work with the help of ICANN.org to make sure that accountability and transparency is maintained. In terms of SOs and ACs, they have a role in the nominating process, as we've already seen, to nominate up to 7 candidates for the review team, taking into consideration skills, diversity, of applicants, conflicts of interest and such. To review the review team's adopted scope of work and to provide feedback, share any concerns with the review team, and to monitor the review team progress on a regular basis and provide input when appropriate. And, of course, this goes without saying that as the different review teams have engagement sessions, post draft reports and final reports for public comment, there's the more structured opportunities for providing input by the SOs and ACs and anybody in the community. As far as the SOAC chairs are concerned, again, tying back to prior topics, they have a responsibility to select a group of up to 21 review team members balanced for diversity and skill from the prospective members that have been nominated by the various SOs and ACs. And as we just finished discussing, provide advice toward conflict resolution should one escalate to that level. ICANN board is responsible to perform requirements as outlined in the bylaws. It oversees the conduct of the review via the OEC, participates in reviews through its board-appointed review team member who represents the board position. As many of you probably know, but it's probably worth mentioning, in the bylaws there is a provision that the board can appoint a board member or liaison to serve on each of the specific reviews. And then finally, ICANN organization, the responsibility here is to provide project management and administrative support to the review team, facilitate the process, Provide guidance on best practices and useful resources, tools, and various other things. Project manage the implementation of board-approved recommendations, and that's on the tail end after the review team work has completed and the board takes action on the recommendations. It's back to the implementation side for ICANN org in most cases. Any questions on any of the roles and responsibilities of the various groups that we've outlined here? Wow, silent group. All right, well, next steps, this is probably the easiest slide. There will be a public session at the ICANN 63 in Barcelona on Wednesday, the 24th of October at 3:30 in the afternoon local time. Also, we are always happy to do roadshow-style presentations to any community group that would like to hear more on this topic. And if you or your group is interested in that, please contact the email address listed here to set up a presentation either in Barcelona or at your upcoming telephonic meeting after Barcelona. I realize the schedule is already incredibly packed. Then there will be a public comment period on the full document, which we anticipate will open in December. Then with the envisioned board adoption in the March-April timeframe of 2019. Well, thank you, Cheryl. I appreciate the relative level of comfort.
I also have my hand up, but that's not because I'm uncomfortable. It's a question, Larissa. Cheryl Langdonor for the record, for the meeting record. I am very aware from an ALAC at large point of view that there are significant clashes for our people to attend the planned session, the public session in Barcelona. That just happens. We all know how ICANN planning of meetings works. Things just flash. That's a given. Were you asked in the earlier webinar to do any presentation to ALAC and at large? I doubt it would be in Barcelona because I know what their schedule already looks like. But did anyone raise that issue with you? If not, I will take it back to our combined policy working group and ask them to consider this at next week's meeting and get back to the Secretariat.
Thank you for that. To answer your question, no, we have not been asked, and I completely understand that the schedule is probably beyond challenging. Would be happy to do a presentation similar to this for the ALAC after ICANN at some point. At your convenience. So please do take it back to your group and let us know what would be good. And we'd be happy to do this presentation that way. And also, while we're talking about these kinds of items, I'll just take the opportunity to remind you all that on a related note, we, having to do with next steps on reviews, there is actually a public comment closing tomorrow, end of day tomorrow, tomorrow, my apologies. So this would be October 5th. And it's a relatively brief consultation paper on next steps on reviews dealing with scheduling of HRT3, an update on operating standards, which you've just heard, and various other proposals on how to move forward with improvements, longer range improvements to specific reviews as well as organizational reviews. So if I could just make a pitch, if any of you would like to provide your input and comments on that, it would be very much appreciated. Looks like there's no other questions or comments, so I will just say thank you very much for spending the last hour or so, minus 8 minutes, with us discussing operating standards. Very much appreciate your interest and your input, and looking forward to seeing many of you in Barcelona. Thank you very much.
And thanks very much to you, Larissa. Bye.
Bye-bye.